Hey, I just got back from lunch. Did you finish that report yet?
Not exactly. Still working on it. I'm not finished just yet. I got a little sidetracked, but I will get them to you first thing this afternoon.
It is first thing this afternoon.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I mean, I am working on
it. What do you mean that the report isn't finished yet?
I'm still in the process of working on it. I've just been a little distracted.
Distracted? Our meeting starts in an hour.
I can have it.
No. What were you doing? Were you listening to another hunting podcast again? I swear, I give the staff in this office the freedom to do whatever they want to do as long as they meet a deadline. That is the first bullet underneath your job description. Pays attention to detail and deadline. And deadline. Dude, are you even listening to me right now?
Welcome to episode 73 of the Whitetail Distraction Podcast. My name's Austin, and Chuck's here. What's up, bud?
What's going on, man?
Not too much, man. Just distracted by whitetails, you know?
Yes, I do. Oh, yeah. You know what? After this episode, it got me, it definitely had me distracted for whitetails. I was off the kick. You know, I was 100% turkeys. I think you were, too. But
I'm still ready for turkeys, man. Something about shooting a big-ass screaming chicken in the face with a shotgun just has me excited.
Yeah. Well, this is the time of year, you know, when the uptick starts hitting YouTube channels. Everyone's throwing their old turkey content out there, and you can't get enough of it. I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
I love it. I've been watching every night, just episode after episode of turkey hunting. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm with you, bud. I think I'm going to get a couple new calls here pretty quick, and just to get back into it a little bit, you know?
Yeah, you still rocking Woodhaven or what? What's going on? What kind of calls you want? Because, I mean, we still have A&F at Buddy Allen.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen. That'll make us some calls.
I ran an A&F that I had from the year before that I didn't actually use. So I ran that last year, and I ran a Woodhaven. You know, I'm so hit and miss on the Woodhavens anymore. I'm not sure what I really like. I don't know. I just feel like they're so freaking raspy. I'll find something.
They are really raspy. They're, I know, when super. We hunted together, I mean, you were using that one. I'm like, damn. Like, that's an old girl.
Yeah, they're just wicked raspy, man.
Marlboros.
Smoking Marlboros. Oh, but I'm going to play around with a couple and just kind of see what I like and then maybe see if Kyle wants to make me something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've already talked to him. He's perfectly fine with it. I don't know if you saw or heard he's doing a dollar. He's donating a dollar to every call that he sells this year to the actual Allegheny National Forest, the A&F, which is pretty cool.
That's beautiful, man. I love that.
Yeah. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know you could do such a thing.
I didn't either, but I'm cool with it. That's a great cause. I love the Allegheny National Forest.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense too. You know, so.
Yeah, definitely.
That's cool. I'm glad to have met him and become good friends with him, you know, playing college baseball and stuff with him. And he's a good dude. So,
no, yeah. Oh, I totally agree, man.
Way we can help him out. But
yeah,
man. But, you know, I miss it. I miss deer season a little bit, man. I don't know about you, but talking to the Fennel boys here, it had to get you jacked up. I know it got me jacked up.
It has me wanting to go out and put some miles on the ground and see if I can find some bone, man.
Yeah. Yeah, shed season's upon us pretty much. I don't know. What do you think? You waiting a little bit, or you going out early with all the cold weather we've had?
Man, if the snow melts, I think I got to go out and just hit a couple of the spots that I know some other people might hit. So yeah. That's kind of my plan, but if the snow doesn't melt and it holds on for a while, I'm going to be stuck inside, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was just snowing here a minute ago. I think we're going to get a little bit of more snow, but probably nothing real cumulative, and I don't know, maybe this weekend. I'm planning on doing a little rabbit hunting Saturday, so if you're available, but you might do a few hours of that Saturday, just try to get out.
Yeah, we'll see what's going on. Another buddy actually asked me if I wanted to go rabbit hunting too. I don't know what I'm doing Saturday. I have to build a bench. I don't know, maybe I'll put it off, we'll see.
Yeah, benches are for March.
Benches are for March. I like it. I like your style. But this episode, man, it's a great episode. I really had a good time talking to these guys. They're both really super easy to talk to. They love hunting. So, I mean, what's better than that? Talking to guys that love hunting.
Exactly. And local guys, PA boys, been here hunting their whole life, hunted 2D. You know, I ran into them down in 2B hunting some public ground, doing the same stuff we do. And it's just like, you can tell right off the bat, we're the same kind of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you, man. Well,
let's not delay any longer, huh?
Yeah, let's quit babbling. Let's get them on.
All right, man. Let's do it. All right. Welcome back to another great episode, boys and girls. We have a couple special guests for you today, local PA boys that give the meaning of Pennsylvania tradition to a T. These guys have grown up in it. They've been around it their whole lives, and I am extremely excited to talk to both Mike and Rick Fennell, father-son combo. Funny thing, we'll get into the story how I met Mike, but they are with the Grip and Grin Outdoors. So Mike and Rick, how you boys doing tonight?
Good, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're great, man. I appreciate it. It's great. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. We're excited to have you guys on.
Very excited. Very excited. I want to know a little bit more about the guy that I met in a parking lot in a public land hunting area.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it. No, that was a funny story to that. I actually met you in a public land parking lot in 2B earlier this fall. I was coming out because I forgot something at the truck and you were just headed in, you know, exchanged words, how you're doing, good lucks. And now here we are a few months later after a long season. So
I like it.
Yeah. I was coming in with maybe like an hour of light left. I already had the spot in mind that I was going to go to, and I had all this new gear I wanted to try. And so I said, screw it, I'm going to go. It's after work. It's early season. It's hot. Why not? Let's give it hell. And then I see you sitting there, and I think I made the comment something about, you're done early. You must have had some luck.
Yes, you did. That's exactly what you said.
Yeah.
I wish that was the case, but it wasn't. Yeah. I just forgot stuff at the truck.
Yeah, you forgot.
Now, didn't you leave a business card or something in his window or something? Did I hear that?
Yeah.
That is correct.
That is correct.
Yeah, I offered you my rope. I think you forgot
it was my tether.
Tether, your tether. Yep. Yeah, I was like, well, hey, I'm a saddle hunter. I got one. You want to use it? You're like, no, I have one. I just forgot it.
I just forgot it.
I was like, all right, cool. And then I never even saw the card. I went and luckily I stopped for gas right there at the gas station on 19 and I pulled out and I saw it sitting there in the light. I'm like, oh shit. So then I grabbed it. I was like, oh, no shit. That's pretty cool. And I figured I'd reach out to you and like, hey, man, exchange words, you know, and we do the similar stuff. We're doing the same shit. You know, we seem like pretty similar guys. Let's get you on a podcast. And here we are months later.
It's pretty cool. Small world. Ended up finding out we even hunt like similar areas. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Did you ever go in that area I told you about, that little doe spot?
Right after you told me, I walked over there, looked around. Honestly, don't be surprised if you see me back in there at some point in the years to come. But
by all means, it's a good little...
I walked in, checked it out, and I was like, I'm just getting out of here. I'm already late. I'm already sweated up. I'm just going home.
Yep.
Thank you for the tip. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. It's about helping another outdoorsman, you know?
That's what it's about. I mean, if you're not doing that, then I feel like that's how us as a group, as hunters, just get bad name. We get our bad rep. So
certainly.
Well, why don't we jump into getting a little bit more about each of you, if you want to kind of introduce yourself and just a small background. It doesn't have to be anything huge, but if you want to tell us a little bit about each of you so the listeners get to know you a little better.
Oh, well, Dad, you got a little length of your background than me, so I guess I'll let you go first.
Well, I grew up in Armstrong County, spent my whole life here. And we had talked earlier, I come from a large hunting family. I mean, both of my parents hunted. My grandparents on both sides hunted. It was huge. I mean, it was really important to carry on that tradition. So, you know, when I did have kids, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to have to pass this on. I mean, my parents didn't have a lot of money, didn't, you know, give me any large fortunes to carry on, but they gave me their love of the outdoors, and I was more than happy to pass it on to Mike and my younger son, Matt. So, but, you know, and I mostly gun hunted, but I didn't start to bow hunt until, I was probably 16 years old. We were small game hunting, and I was with my dad. And this guy come up out of the woods in full camouflage, and my dad knew him. So we stopped, And he come up to the door and was talking back and forth about seeing deer and this and that. And when we left, we drove on down the road. I told Dad, I said, you know what? I want to do that. That looked really cool. Got a bow for Christmas that year, a compound, and the fire was lit, and I haven't looked back since. I mean, to date, I've only ever killed one buck with a gun, and so I've been all bow. And then, you know, and it was a lot of fun. I took the compound after 4, 5, 6 deer, got rid of the compound and shot traditional, and I've been shooting traditional ever since.
Oh,
and,
man.
I love it. You know, it's just this, and I've shot way more deer than I had taken with the compound. However, I will say this, I have missed way more deer than I probably would have missed if I'd have stuck with the compound. But, that's pretty much it. I never did a whole lot of small game hunting. For me, it's pretty much been deer, archery in the fall, turkeys in the spring. I don't really even fish that much. So, but that seems to be my gig. And then, the whole filming aspect, I tried off and on in my early years. I'd carry those big camcorders with the full VHS tape in it.
Yeah.
And, it was a disaster. You know, probably a lot of guys probably tried that back in the day, but it wasn't till we were walking out. I was telling Mike this earlier, when we were walking out that spring morning, when he killed his very first gobbler, and it was such an amazing hunt, took over an hour, and we were walking out with him carrying his bird, and I'm thinking, God, I wish we'd have had that on video, you know? So, you know, eventually we started working our way into it. We made our own, camera arms, you know, and it went from there. So, but it's just a lot of fun.
I like it, man.
Cool.
I like that little caveat that you put in there too. I've missed a lot more than I would have with the compound.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
I throw up an air ball every once in a while. Yeah.
That's very honest. I appreciate that.
Ah, no problem.
All right, Mike.
As for me, man, I remember all I remember is shooting a bow. I don't know anything else. I mean, there's pictures floating around the house of me when I think I was 3 shooting a little fiberglass recurve up at my grandma's. And my cousins and I used to play a game that we'd shoot the arrow straight up in the air, and if it stuck in the ground when it come down, we killed whatever we were shooting at. And if it fell over, then we missed, you know. And since then, it's an addiction, man. I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you that I am 110% addicted to this sport, to this game, to hunting. And it's progressed over the years. Dad's told me stories about when I was little and he would leave, how I would cry because I didn't get to go. And
that's true.
Now you can't get me away from it. If I'm not doing it, I'm thinking about it. If I'm not thinking about it, I'm talking about it. And if I'm not doing any of that, well, then that just means I'm doing it. We shoot religiously all year. And then the amount of time and effort we put into it is crazy. It's mind blowing to me to think of everything else that's going on in the world today. And that's kind of my getaway, my escape. And man, if I ever lose the fire for that, you might as well just bury me then, because that's just what I do.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. When Mike was just a toddler, to get him to sleep, we'd go spotting deer, and he wouldn't go spotting for deer unless he had his camouflage on. So, it was ingrained in him at a young age.
I like
that. It's funny. Well, I remember his very first turkey hunt. I woke him up at 4 o'clock. I went in and woke him up, and I told him to get up and get around. I went to the bathroom, and by the time I come downstairs, I'm telling you, it couldn't have been 10 minutes or so. When I come down, walked into the living room, he was sitting on the couch in full camo, ready to go. I mean, he was that about it. I try to get him up for school. No way. You know,
man.
You tell him you're going hunting. He's ready to go.
That sounds like me so much. It's so weird.
That's just, like I said, man, that's just part of who I am. It's the lifestyle I live. I mean, we're not just out there filling tags. We're eating every single thing we put on the ground, and extremely grateful for the meat we put in the freezer, for sure.
No, absolutely. And you know what? It takes a lot of dedication to shoot your bow year round. Most guys, and I gotta admit, I'm guilty of it too, I don't start shooting until probably June. I might shoot for 3 months before the season or something like that. We might shoot a couple of 3D shoots or something like that. And, you know, I'm guilty of it. I can say 100% I'm guilty of it. And, you
yeah,
know,
I mean,
you shoot trad, though, you have to. You have to shoot year-round if you shoot trad.
I do. Yeah, I do especially. I have to. And I feel it. I'm not a great shot anyhow, and I need all the practice I can get. So, but, yeah, you need to shoot. You need to shoot year-round, I think.
I would agree.
And it's
with
no different than scouting or anything, too. We scout, yep, run trail cameras. We try to all year-round. We always tell each other there is no off-season. There's none.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the running joke within the group, yeah.
Right.
I think I fall guilty to more of the season starts and you're out there every single day and you're hitting it hard and I don't shoot as much as I should then, because a lot of times it's like right after work, jump in the truck, drive out there, get out of the truck and go. You know, like when we met, I was you know, left of sunlight, but I just got out of work and I didn't care. I wanted to be in the woods.
Yep. That it's that time of year. You live for that time of year. And we've kind of, I mean, again, something I just remember for as long as I can remember is we carry judo points in our quiver, every single one of us. So in that case, I mean, there is a lot of times you go to the woods in the morning, you come home like, man, I don't want to go shoot. I want to go take a nap before I go back out or whatever it may be. It makes it easy on your walk in to take 2-3 shots, or before you climb down in the morning, pick out a leaf and take a shot from the tree before you get down, just to stay fresh. And I know, if not everybody, almost everybody within our group carries one. And does it help? Maybe, maybe not. But
oh,
it's something
no,
we all do.
Definitely helps.
Yeah,
it
would
definitely
agree.
Helps.
I would agree. I mean, there's times when I haven't shot my bow all year and then I get an opportunity at a deer and I shoot and I hit like 4 inches high. I'm like, well, that's weird. And then I go shoot my bow and sure enough, I'm 4 inches high.
Yep.
And you know, stuff happens when you're walking through the woods. There's a lot of things you can bump. You know, and
absolutely.
And I would say, yeah, every day you probably should at some point at least release one arrow. And I, you know, I have no use. I can easily set up some lights in my backyard and shoot. You know, I definitely could. 20 yards all day long. I could do it every time. You know, it's just sometimes when you get in that grind, I do. I get in that grind and I just it's the last thing that I think about. I'm more worried about like where I'm going the next day. What are the weather conditions? What, you know, and I just go nuts over it, drive myself crazy.
It's easy to do. I mean, yeah, like I said, you prepare all year for those 6 or 7 weeks for us. And I mean, I don't know how much more you guys hunt to be than we do, but that's an extra month of the season. So I know for us, 6 weeks, we get to week 5. It's like, okay, we really got to buckle down here because we are getting beat and we're burnt. But you know, it's kind of the opposite of turkey season. The longer the season goes, the better it gets in the fall. And you're right. When it's the grind, that's all that matters is the grind. There really isn't anything else that matters.
Yeah.
Well, and you talk about the grind a lot of times, and we say this all the time. Everybody keeps talking about Sunday hunting. And I'm thinking, you know, and Mike and I have discussed this before. It's like, you know, I don't know. I kind of like having that day off. You know, it gives me a reason to sleep in. If they allowed that Sunday hunting, I suppose we'd have to be out there doing it. So that's kind of
a
double-edged sword there, bud.
I'd have a lefty lifestyle, but I would love every minute of it.
Yeah. I joke with them. I'd turn into a fair weather hunter. I would just pick and choose my moments way, way more than I do. And don't get me wrong, I am not afraid to hunt in the elements, but there are certain days throughout the course of a season that you know you shouldn't be in a tree, but you go anyway, because you know that your days are numbered. If you add in, it was a 7-week season this year. If you add in a whole nother week, okay, those are 7 more days that I may not have to go to the tree when it's 85 degrees in the second week of October because, well, I have to.
Yeah.
So that, it, like you said, it's a double-edged sword when it comes to Sunday hunting.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, man.
I'll take them all. Personally,
I agree. I would too. I spent more time in the tree this year than I have any year. So I agree.
I actually missed. I missed a really nice buck that Sunday of rifle. I was more bummed, I think, that I missed him because it was Sunday. Like I wanted to kill a deer on that day worse than anything ever, and I was so bummed I missed him on that extra day. Man,
you're not the only person that felt that way, because I know multiple people that did. I mean, even one guy did shoot one on Sunday, and that was like the highlight. You know, it was like I shot a buck on the, you know, on the first Sunday of rifle season in PA ever. So that was,
see, that was kind of, I went out the first Sunday of archery, and I'll tell you what, around here nobody had any business being in a tree that day. It was like 60-mile-an-hour winds. Like, trees were coming down, man. It was...
That was 2 days after I shot the buck I shot this year, I think.
Yeah. It was a gnarly day, man. I went out and I stayed in on a field edge. I wasn't even in the trees, and it was whipping. I left early. I was like, it's not even worth being out here.
I did stay that night. I stayed till dark. I climbed up maybe 5 feet up in a tree, and after the second tree, I watched fall to the ground. I climbed down and stood beside my tree for the rest of the night, and I knew I wasn't going to be anything. I mean, it was like legitimately 60-mile-per-hour wind gust.
But you're out there.
But I was out there. There was no
weather.
Can't
shoot them on the couch, man.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, you can't.
60-mile-an-hour winds are not.
Yeah. If you're not there, there's 100% chance you're not going to get one, unless you hit one with a car or something. This has probably been 40 years ago. I was hunting a private farm, and it was the night I had to leave for New York that night. And I went out on an evening hunt. I went in the afternoon and put a stand over a smoking hot scrape. By the time I went in there in the early afternoon to climb in my stand, there was a thunderstorm moving in. The winds were high, and I climbed in the tree, and I'm literally standing there with one arm around the tree as the tree's swaying back and forth thinking, what am I doing? I have absolutely no business being in the tree. I wasn't in the tree half an hour, and I turned around, here come a buck, and I never even heard him. He just, the next thing I know, he was standing next to me, and I shot him, and he ran 60 yards and fell over. And I had, by the time I got back to my truck, it was a torrential downpour. But I had no business being in the tree, but that's just how things work.
Unreal, man.
You got to go.
Yeah, I hear you. And sometimes those weather days are some of the best days.
Yes.
You're right.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
Just not that day with the high winds. Nothing was moving.
It was a Sunday. They don't move on Sundays.
Yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, let's take it back just a little bit. Let's get into when you started Grip and Grin and what Grip and Grin's all about. And let's hear a little bit about it. Who are the guys on the team? You know,
it all started kind of as a joke. I remember Dad coming home one day. This was back in 2014, I think. Dad came home from work and he just looked at me and basically was like, I've been watching these videos on YouTube and I want to try it. Like, I'm going to get a camera and we're going to try it. And I'm like, at first I was a little skeptical. I'm like, man, what we do is hard enough already. Now you want to implement more movement, more gear. But okay, I'm down. Let's try it. The first camera arm that we had, I actually built in metal shop when I was in high school.
Yeah,
I mean,
did.
We were about as green and as raw as you could get when it came to filming hunts. We had no idea what we were doing. We had no editing experience. And I kind of laugh about it now because if you go back and watch some of our first videos on our YouTube channel and stuff, like, I want to say the first video we ever published was my brother missing a turkey.
Yeah, that was the very first video.
It was more laughs than anything. I mean, we missed a couple jakes. I took a couple pop shots after he missed, and it was just fun at that point. But over the years, we've added guys. We've added cameras. I think this past year we had 6 cameras in the woods.
Just, that's solid, though. You're getting all the content having that many cameras going.
It's fun. I mean, it's just fun. And then my buddies see me doing it and see Dad doing it. And they're like, well, what do I got to do to become a part of this? And it's like, man, just get a camera and film for us. We're nothing. I mean, we're not a big name in this field. I mean, we're just having fun doing what we do. And being able to relive these memories now is probably the biggest part of what we do and why we do it. The turkey hunt Dad was talking about earlier, that was an hour-long hunt that was start to finish. There was no break, and there was stuff through that turkey hunt that I'll probably never see again. Just the hunt itself, I remember it clear as day, but if I was able to relive that hunt through a video, we talk about it all the time, that would probably be the best hunt we'd ever put on film. That's just what we do. We're just having fun, and it's been cool to see us progress over the years. Our editing skills are getting better. The video quality is getting better. All of a sudden, somebody fills a tag early. Now we have a cameraman, and those are by far the best footage we put out is when we have two guys in the tree. As silly as it sounds, but I mean, it makes sense. But at the same time, two guys moving, more camera gear. It's just, it's just fun. And it's another challenge that none of us are afraid to back down from.
And like and I said, as a side effect too, there's another thing that really works to our advantage that we didn't plan on, but now when we get these, maybe a shot later in the evening or whatever, and we're not sure of the hit, yeah, we got it on film. Now we can go home and put it on the computer, put it on the screen on TV, and get to play it back. And, you know, if you're not filming, you don't get to see that. But that in itself it can be a blessing too at times.
Yeah, it's extremely helpful, especially on those.
Oh, big time.
You know, a lot of times you don't find your arrow. Maybe the arrow stays in the deer. There's a lot of things happen where, you know, you're not too sure about the shot. And the best thing is to out review the video. Okay, looks like a good shot. We're going back in, you know, or hey, it's a little back. Let's wait until morning. You know, that is hugely, hugely helpful, especially when you don't have the arrow, you know.
Yep.
We've been on both sides of that. Yeah. I mean, good and bad.
Guys have been beating me up too because I'm the trad guy. I shoot the cedar and the old style aluminum. I don't have a lighted nock. Well, they finally convinced me to go to a lighted nock this year. This is my first time doing that. Man, I'll tell you what, I was greener than heck the first part of the season. I put the arrow on the string, the light would come on in the dark. I'm going, how the heck do I shut this off? You know, I'm sending Mike a text. He says, we need a safety pin. Dude, I'm 20 feet up in a tree. Where am I going to find a safety pin? So I had to dig in my pack for my knife and to get up there and shut that off. So now, you know, if you ever see me in my quiver, I have a safety pin stuck to my leather hood on my bow just for that purpose.
Well, I'm glad you're using nocturnals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let them go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a lot, like I said, it's a lot of fun. And we're, like I said, we're by no means professionals at this, but what you see on these videos is who we are. It's how we act. We're not, this stuff isn't scripted. This isn't reenacted. This is raw emotion, real conversations, just downright having fun with this sport of hunting. I mean, it's part of who all of us are that are in this group, and it shows.
And it seems like you guys do a lot of real time, you know, when you're putting your video together, it's the actual timeline of how things occurred, you know, and it's in real.
We try to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes across really authentic, and you guys actually have some pretty cool videos. It's something that, being from Pennsylvania and wanting to do it, you know, as Austin and I have been carrying a camera around, we can watch it and get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And we respect it because we know how hard it is. We know how difficult it is. And we know that you guys doing it, it's relatable. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
We kind of talk about that too. Like, you pull up our YouTube channel, we don't have thousands of views, but the views that we do have are people like us, guys that are local. I know our bow club, every time we show up, oh, well, there's the Grip and Grin crew. You know, how many are here today? Or it's just, I think the biggest compliment we had was, we were at the Reinhardt 100 a few years back in Ohio, and we were hanging out at the pool at the campground, and we didn't have any gear on. Like, we have hats and shirts and stuff that we do for us and for fun. Some people want them. That's fine. We'll get them for you. We were just hanging out, no gear on. We had a young kid come up.
I want one.
Hey, send me your address, man. I'll send you one. Like, come up to us at the pool and was like, hey, you guys have a YouTube channel? This kid was from West Virginia. And again, we didn't have our stuff on. This kid picked us out of a crowd, and it's like, man, that's cool. You know, we did something right. And then, I mean, that's happened multiple times now throughout.
Well, I think that same shoot, if you remember, we were in line at a target, a double shot. It was a target one of the stations had two targets. We were in line to shoot, and the guy behind us said, hey, I saw you guys. You guys did a video on this shoot, didn't you? That's how he ended up at the shoot. Googled or, you know, got on YouTube and searched for R100 in Coshocton, and our video come up. So that got him to the shoot. So that was kind of cool too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. We usually put a group of guys together every year and do the camo care shoot, and we cover it. We do a podcast on it. We usually sponsor targets and stuff like that.
That is cool.
It's been pretty cool, man. I really like doing 3D shoots.
We'll have to get together sometime.
Yeah, you guys ought to come up and do that shoot with us this year. It's not far. It's just up in Freiburg. It's not far.
Oh, you know, I've heard a lot about Freiburg. I've heard a lot about their shoots, and I have not been there, but I did We'll have to try that. But get me the tapes. We might have to make a trip up there.
Oh, they're fun. They're fun, and it's for a good cause. It's Camo Cares, and all the proceeds go to wounded veterans and terminally ill kids. So it's pretty sweet. It sends them on hunts of a lifetime.
Yeah, it's basically make a wish for outdoorsmen.
Yeah,
that's cool. Is it put on every year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Is this an annual thing?
Yep.
Oh well, yeah. You'll have to get us the dates. I wouldn't mind seeing. We'll make a trip up for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually looked today. They haven't released the date of the shoot yet, but as soon as they do, I'll let you know. Because
do that.
We've been going every year now for 3 years, and this will be our fourth year. But I think it's their 12th annual shoot that they do it, and they raised. They've raised. I believe they said in like the first 10 years, they raised over $1 million. They raised roughly $100,000 a year.
Wow. That's awesome.
Really cool. Huge party, a ton of people. You got to get registered early because it fills up. It will sell out. But even if you don't shoot, there's always people that come and just party and do the raffles. They have gun raffles, ticket raffles, all kinds of fun stuff.
Now, is this something that goes all weekend? Is this a multi-day shoot, or is it a couple days, or is it?
It's a 1 day event. A lot of guys go up RVs and their campers, and they'll stay Friday night there on the actual grounds, and then they will shoot Saturday. And Saturday's the whole party. It starts in the morning. The shoot's at like 9 a.m. and then they have live entertainment. They have raffles going all day. You can literally be there from like 9 p.m. It's crazy.
Sounds like a good time.
We're definitely going to have to make a trip. Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out.
Yeah, 3D
that
targets.
Like it would be a
30 target course, all outdoors. The one course is really cool. There's a lot of like uphill, downhill shots, and it's pretty fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time.
So, how did you guys come up with the name, I wonder? Because it's a pretty cool name.
That was my next question.
This, I gotta ask. Again,
that's all Mike there.
Just having fun with it. And this kind of transpired really quick from the time we were like, hey, we're going to start filming to like all of a sudden, okay, well, what are we going to do with the videos? We're just going to keep them. And Dad's like, well, we'll just make a YouTube channel. And then that led to, well, we need a name. And it didn't take me very long to come up with it, because to me, grip and grin, that's what I'm trying to do at the end of every hunt. I want to grip and grin. It just kind of stuck. Like, some people were like, well, that's more of a saying. Yeah, but that's what we're doing. I mean, we're gripping and grinning. We take grip and grin pics. And then the logo, I just threw something together. G&G in some graffiti style letters with some deer antlers. And we played with that multiple times. Tried incorporating a turkey beard or spurs at one point. There's just, again, it was just something we had fun. I drew that original logo by hand.
That's cool.
And my younger brother, he's more of the tech side of things. He's not big into the hunting side, and that's fine. Nothing against that at all. He understands it. He supports what Dad and I do, and he's our technical support, we call him. He took my original drawing and made it digital and cleaned it up and made it what it is.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
I like that you kept it all in the family too. You know, the entire process was all still family related and within both you, your brother, and your dad. I mean, that's something you'll look back on and be like, that's something, the project that we did as a family. It's, you know, you'll be talking about forever. Right.
Oh yeah. And it's went through the roof from what it started as. I mean, at first it was just, hey, we're going to do this for fun. It was me and Dad. Like I said, and then all of a sudden, buddies start seeing it. Well, hey, what do I got to do?
How can I get involved? Yeah.
Well, just get a camera and film for us, man. Right. Put a video out every year. And then my brother, like I said, is huge into the computers and technical stuff. Got us on Facebook and Instagram. Made our own website. Like, we have our own website.
GrippingGrinOutdoors.com.
In the processes of, you know, trying to get some of our, you know, our shirts and hats and stuff. A few years ago, we did a 3D schedule when the main websites were down. We put together a 3D schedule that we had on there with all the local shoots. It's just, the possibilities are endless in reality. It's just a matter of how serious about it do we want to get, and time and money, really.
Yeah.
No, why don't you name a couple of them guys, a couple of your pro staffers, if you don't mind. You want to give them a shout out?
So I mean, first and foremost, started with Dad. He's he's the heart and soul behind this whole operation. I mean, he's...
Oh, you're too cool. You must want something.
No, it's the truth. I wouldn't be the outdoorsman I am today if it wasn't for him.
Oh, thank you for that. But that, yeah.
But Fred Corbett, basically a brother to me. He's the only one in the group that has yet to dive off the deep end and get a camera. But he's been here since the beginning, represents us, supports us wholeheartedly. Dan Laux, he has, we call him the Mojo Man because the guy just kills bucks every single year. Cody McConnell, another kid I grew up with. I've known him since grade school. Jordan, Jordy Truscott, I filmed him shoot his first deer with a bow this year. And, the other Chris. Big one, Chris Casiso is also on board filming for us. All those guys have cameras. Like I said, except for Freddie, we're slowly inching him to dive off the deep end. Whether he does it this year or not, we'll find out. But and it's it goes beyond that. You know, multiple buddies support it and have shirts and hats. Like we put an order together. I think the first two orders we put together that were just for the group, I think we had almost $3,000 worth of stuff. And that was just for the group. I mean, now we have a little bit of a stockpile when it comes to that stuff because all of a sudden people want this stuff. Like, hey, I want to support you. Like, yeah, you're just having fun, but it's a cool t-shirt. And it's a t-shirt, you know? I mean, who doesn't need another t-shirt for 10 or 15 bucks or whatever?
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool, man. That's pretty cool. I know exactly what you're going through. We went through a lot of the same stuff, you know, starting the podcast and everything. And it's amazing to see where something that you want to start as a little side project or a passion project and what it turns into. And I think you guys are the epitome of that for sure. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely appreciate
We're
it.
We're trying. It's a work in process. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm a new subscriber, so I haven't caught up on all the videos, but I've been going through a couple of them. So.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. Absolutely. Let us know what you think, too, man.
Let us know. You'll notice one thing right off the bat. Mike here is he wears his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, there are some that I thought he was going to outright cry. I mean, because of what was going on in the hunt. So, but
that's just the person
he doesn't try
I am.
To hold. Yeah, he doesn't try to hold his emotions. And so that's a lot of fun.
I do that in everything I do. Sports, baseball, hunting. I mean, I'm not afraid to show or act how I feel. That's just, to me, that's part of it. If you have to hide that, then you're probably out there for the wrong reasons anyway.
Well, I watched your 2020 buck kill and, you know, I didn't see any of that. You were like stone face. I didn't even see you like smile at all.
Dude, I was so in shock, and I'm sure we'll get into that hunt at some point tonight. But when I tell you the story, and I mean you've already seen the video, so you know the story. But like, there was so much that went into this year for me, and it was an emotional year. It was a roller coaster of a year, and I, like I said earlier, I put more time in the woods in the tree this year than I ever have. And it, Dad jokes about it because if you watch the video. Right after the shot, I don't say anything to me, it felt like forever, but it's only probably a few seconds just because I'm trying to process what just happened because it happened so fast. It caught me so off guard. And then for everything to come together the way it did was just amazing.
Well, let's get into it a little bit. I mean, I want to hear you tell a story.
If you watch, you can see his binocular because binocular case on his shoulder, on his binos, on his chest. And not long after the shot, you'll see it start to shake. He gets the shakes pretty bad, and it's so funny.
I'm going to go back and watch that now after this.
Right after the shot, I'm like you said, I'm stoned. There's like no emotion. But then all of a sudden, I think it's right after I turn around to turn the GoPro off. I turned back around. You can just see it literally. And now, I mean, nobody's going to see this, but you guys can see me right now. It literally on my chest, it just starts. I mean, it just starts going. And I remember that clear as day. I remember the first time we watched the video on the big screen and I pointed it out to Dad. I was like, and the shakes start now, right as the pack starts shaking. And it's obvious. Like you can see it clear as day start shaking. But what a year it was in the woods for me.
Yeah, I want you to recap the whole year. I don't want you to start with the best story.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about.
For the end.
Well, let me I'll relay one of his hunts. And I wasn't in the tree with him, but it was on the same farm, actually. It was an evening hunt. He's on a bean field. And usually what we do is we get down out of the tree, usually we'll call the other one, let them know, hey, we're on our way out, whatever. Well, yeah, you do. Well, it got to be well after dark. And I was with my wife, and I said, yeah, I can't believe I haven't heard from Mike yet. I said, well, I'm going to call him. Well, I called him, and he answers the phone, like, whispering. He goes, what? I go, dude, where are you? He goes, I'm still in the tree. I go, good God, why? He goes, I got five bear around me. And I guess one of the bear even come up and put its paws on the bottom steps of his climbing stick. So, yeah, he was a little shook up, and he wasn't ready to move out of the tree until the bears moved away. But I think if I remember right, you went clear to the middle of the soybean field to walk out. Didn't you?
I walked the way out around them. Yeah.
I can't blame you there, bud.
One come to the base of my tree, and I had to scare it off. It started coming up like onto my tree, and I was in a climber back then. I had to scare it off. And even after I scared it off and run a country mile, I still waited till someone with a gun came and at least was there before I walked out.
Yeah, it was definitely, and I'm by no means afraid of that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe when I was little, but like, that's a little intimidating. Not one, not two, not even three, but five. And one of them was looking up at me.
I don't like bears in dark. That just doesn't mix for me there.
Yeah. So, but 2020 for me, I mean, is a full recap. We could go the whole way back to the spring.
I think we should.
Unfortunate. I did shoot a turkey last spring. Didn't get it on video. Kind of a short, funny story to that. I had just got into the Carpenters Union, and I had just got a call to go to my first job, and I was in the woods. It was a Monday morning, I think. I could be wrong. I don't remember what day of the week it was. But anyway, I got a call. Guy says, hey, you're going to work. I'm like, okay, cool. Come out, call dad. Hey, I just got a call. I'm going to work next week. What should I do? And he goes, ditch the camera gear and go kill one. He goes, you got a second tag. If you want to film one or get one with a bow or whatever, take the gun and just go kill one. So I left that spot and I went back to the spot I was off the roost. I left all the camera gear in the car, of course. Like I was told, I agreed. It wasn't, I completely agreed with that. Let's go put one in on the ground. I kid you not when I say this, I left the car with my gun, no camera gear. 10 minutes. It took me 10 minutes to call in two longbeards screaming their head off to 15 yards and could have killed them both. Just picture perfect, walked right down the tram road, did everything they were supposed to do, gobbled the whole way to 15 yards, roll them over. No camera gear. Textbook hunt would have been an amazing video. And where's the camera gear? 150 yards back in the car. So,
but the one that broke his heart, though, was your bow hunt.
I did seriously try to shoot one with a bow this year. And I have this hunt on video. We did not put it out. We may still end up putting it together. I'm not 100% sure. But I was on the ground with my bow, no blind.
Ooh, that's tough.
And I had...
Yeah, with fluorescent orange bowstrings.
Yeah, and it probably cost me, honestly.
I got them too.
I called it. This bird flew down, hit the ground, was working straight away from me. And this was a bird that Dad and I worked all season. I mean, we hunted this, I'm assuming this specific turkey, very, very hard. And we have multiple calls in our regimen that are the same. And I went in there off the roost thinking, I'm going to start with a different call, something that he hasn't heard. He hit the ground, worked away from me, and I knew he was working away. I switched to the call that I knew Dad was running for the majority of that season and called this bird back on a rope to 8 yards on the ground, no blind, right to the decoy, full strut. And I went to gobbler guillotines this year, headshots only. I did everything but get a shot off at this turkey. And if you watch the video, it wasn't me. I'm a stone. The brim of my hat doesn't even move. I'm breathing heavy, but I did no movements for this bird to pick me. And when I went to draw, he was already boogered and on his way out. That was the heartbreaker of the spring.
Oh, man. That's tough.
And the only thing we could attribute it to was those fluorescent orange bowstrings. And if it wouldn't have been for the GoPro behind him, they could see him and the turkey. I could tell there was no movement. He did not move at all, but those bowstrings stuck out, and I'm pretty sure that's what boogered him.
We kind of feel that way simply because the turkey just went off of the knob and he started gobbling again. It wasn't like he was boogered to the point of, I'm out of here for five. Right. Within 5 minutes, the turkey was already gobbling again. But that was my spring in a nutshell. Fast forward a little bit into the summer. Like I said earlier, I shoot my bow year round and we shoot a lot of 3Ds. I shot a 300 this year.
Ooh.
At a 3D shoot, and I flirted with it all year. I was in the 290s all year. Finally managed to do it, and that was the highlight of my summer. My 3D season, shot a 300 for the first time. I've never done that.
I mean, what can you complain about that? I mean,
that's pretty awesome, right? Like 300.
I think I live around that 230 range there.
Yeah, and I must say. If you would have asked me 2 or 3 years ago if I'd ever shoot a 300, I would have laughed in your face because I was going through the worst case of target panic ever. Like, I did not even want to pick my compound up. I would take the traditional bows and my compound to a 3D shoot. I would shoot my compound for the first half and see how I felt. There were multiple days where halfway through the shoot, compound went to the truck and the recurve came out. Just because I was that... in that dark of a place when it came to shooting a bow. It was terrible. And growing up, I was, we shoot with all my buddies. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but if you beat me, you had a good day. All of a sudden, I became the guy that was like the runt of the litter. Like, I was not beating anybody. And it bothered me. And I went to about rock bottom and started over. I dug myself back out. And I can say that confidently. I mean, I shot a 300 last year. Like, I still have the card hanging on the wall. I'm looking at it right now. It's important to me. Like, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
So fast forward to deer season. I shot two does and my buck. The first doe I shot was in that bean field, same stand that I had the bear under me that Dad was telling you about. And those two kind of go hand in hand. I shot my first doe out of this bean field. Now, and I'll probably catch some flack for this, but I really, personally, I don't care. I was confident in this shot. I shot this first doe at 50 yards, and I pinwheeled her. I made a perfect shot. The deer was not on alert, and I know a lot of things can happen at 50 yards, but I was completely confident in myself and in the situation to take that shot. Got that hunt on film. That doe didn't make it out of the field. The bear come in next. A few days later, they actually left me and went to the gut pile from that doe from a few days prior.
Ooh.
So that's kind of how that all tied together. Shot the second doe also on film off of a different property. Again, didn't go very far. I think she went 40 yards and piled up.
Yeah.
That was actually out of a ground blind that Cody, that I mentioned earlier, he and I built that ground blind out of a old fitting room that I got from Dick's Sporting Goods when I worked there. We turned an old fitting room into a ground blind. You could literally put a bed in there. Like, the thing is huge. We built it on a slightly elevated platform, put a roof on it, cut six windows into it, and now we have the fitting room, is what we call it.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Over a clover plot. So, like, multiple times last year, we're ahead tonight. I'm going to the fitting room. Yeah, so... that was just a side, kind of cool side story there. But after the second, go ahead, Dad.
I think you need to mention that first dove that he shot from 50 yards. Over the summer, we decided to tinker with our arrow setup, and we went to a high FOC single bevel broadhead. Now, Mike was shooting 190 grain single bevel grizzly.
Okay.
And when he hit that doe from 50 yards, it actually on the off side leg, it actually cut the humerus bone completely in half. I'd never seen anything like that in my life.
Yeah, I remember you had a pretty nice arrow set up with the wraps and everything on it.
Yeah.
I think we briefly mentioned that when we ran into one another, but
yeah. And that's another thing, like for me, none of us do. Dad and I especially, we don't shoot factory fletch. We get shafts either bare shaft, or as soon as we get them, we're stripping them and we do them ourselves. That's, you know, again, kind of within the group, we all have our own color scheme. We all have, you know, it's just, it's our way of making our setups part of us.
I like that.
I shoot orange, Dad shoots yellow, Cody shoots green, Freddie shoots red. I mean, we all have our, it's fun. It's something you get to do with, you know, with your setups. So, yeah. But on the Aero setup side, I will probably never shoot anything else. Completely sold on that setup, had amazing performance. But in between the second doe and my buck kill, I did hit a bear with my bow this year at 10 yards. I'm going to say partially on film. I had footage of it. I didn't 100% get the shot. I kind of blocked it out. And if you would have asked me that night, if I would have bet the house that night getting out of the tree that I killed this bear. I was 100% like, I smashed this thing. Pinned him to the ground, did a barrel roll, broke my arrow off, and barreled out of there. And it literally looked like somebody took a bucket of paint and just dumped it for 100 yards and then not another drop. And I did absolutely everything in my power to recover this thing. I mean, five of us and a dog went in the next day and could not turn this thing up.
Man.
I didn't pick my bow up for 5 days. I didn't hunt. I didn't want anything to do with it. It just made me sick. Those opportunities just do not come around every day. I mean, a bear with a bow in PA.
Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's you know, pretty like impressive. That
just doesn't happen.
Oh, man. So, do you think maybe the hole got plugged up with a big hunk of fat or something like that? Or
it may have. I talked to the lady that brought the dog in just through conversation. She thinks I was too far forward and only caught the offside lung. I honestly don't know. To this day, it still stumps me and it bothers me, and it probably will until I end up killing one. I've never killed a bear.
Huh.
With a gun or a bow. So
yeah, neither one of us have either.
It's
a bear's vitals a little farther forward than a deer's vitals?
They're back.
I think they're further back.
Oh, okay. I had that back.
So
I think they're further back. Yeah.
That probably played into it because instincts took over and I said, okay, right behind the shoulder.
Yeah.
And it was slightly quartering to me. So I could see where I did only get one lung. Now, hard lesson to learn, but lesson learned.
Yeah.
I won't make that mistake again. But it did. It bothered me. And like I've said multiple times tonight talking to you guys, I take a lot of pride in what I do and have a lot of respect for the animals that we're out there chasing. And it made me sick. Like I said, I didn't pick my bow up just to even go out back and shoot. Like, hey, I know I can shoot. I just messed up. Yeah. That's on me. And mentally, that bugged me. But it took me multiple days just to pick the bow up and go out back and shoot some. And then a couple more days to get back into the tree. So fast forward a couple days, maybe a week, I had to go to training the last week, which was the seventh week, for work of our archery season. So Friday morning, the 13th of November, I went into the tree knowing that I had 3 days to hunt, and that was it, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And man, what a morning it turned out to be. I mean, right off the bat, you know, broke daylight. It was slow. I think I saw my first deer around 8:15, and it was a spike come off the hill behind me, just cruising through. I'm thinking, okay, cool. Noticed he's looking down into the creek bottom in front of me. Stood up, saw another buck dogging three does. I grunted, I bleated. I couldn't get those deer to do anything. I mean, they had one thing on their mind, and that was running.
Yeah.
So as soon as they worked off, did a rattling sequence, had another spike cruise through. And all that happened, those six deer, were in a half-hour time frame from 8:15 to 8:45. And it's November 13th. I'm thinking, man, if it's like this all day, we're just going to have to try to sit this out as long as we can go.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, now it's 10:30, and I haven't seen another deer. And I'm like, all right, what could I do midday before I get back in? Do I go hang a stand? Do I get down and go take a walk? Like, what do I do here? And for the most part, into November, if I'm not sitting all day, which I rarely ever do, I'm sitting late into the morning, 11, noon, getting out, taking a cat nap, grabbing something to eat, and getting back in. So in my head, I haven't seen anything. It's getting hard to sit here now. It was like 10 minutes to 11. I reached down into my backpack and took a handful of sunflower seeds and threw them in my mouth and said, when I'm done with these, I'm going to pack up and leave. So ate my mouthful of seeds, simultaneously spit the last seed out, stood up, turned around. Why I did this first, I will never know, but I took my arrow off my bow and put it in my quiver. Went to reach for my backpack. Now, mind you, we have all this camera gear to tear down.
Oh, yeah.
Went to reach for my backpack, and I don't remember if something caught my eye or if I heard it, but to my left, here comes this deer, and he's at 60 yards and coming. Now, you want to talk about two of the fastest oh shit moments of my life. One was, there's the deer. Two was when I turned and looked at my bow. There's no arrow knocked. Now, I have to knock an arrow, turn the whole way around, get the camera gear situated and on this deer, turn on the GoPro, the main camera. By that time, he's 35, 30 yards and still coming quite briskly. He was on a trail that I knew if he walked through this opening, it was 26 yards. So I moved my pin to 26 yards. He comes into this opening. I'm already at full draw waiting. Camera's on him, whole 9 yards. He does a 90-degree turn and comes right to me. Walks right up to me, 10 yards, and works the scrape, which I have on film. Probably some of the coolest footage I think I've ever seen or captured. I mean, the deer is putting the licking branch in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking down on this deer. Now, I mean, think. I'm 22-ish feet in the air, and this deer's at 10 yards. So the deer is close. And I'm looking down on his rack, and I can clearly see that it's wider than his body. I can clearly see that this is a big deer. I don't know how many points he has. I know he's legal. My mind is just on, okay, we got to get an arrow into this thing. And he is...
Well, you thought he was going to see you.
Well, there's nothing between him and I at 10 yards, and he's working this.
I could have sworn he was going to see you, man.
I turned my bow sideways just to try and break up my outline. I didn't have a face mask or anything on at this point. Like, I'm climbing down, and I'm looking down through my bow at this deer working this scrape. And it was then that I realized my pin was still at 26 yards. Now, I shoot a single pin slider. At the very bottom of my slider is 20 yards. 20 and in, I can shoot same pin. I don't have to hold any different. Deer finishes working this scrape, comes right underneath me, walks into my next opening, and I just threw the camera to that hole because I knew it was that opening or it wasn't going to happen. And at that point, I had 3 days left. The season I had was an up and down roller coaster. I had already had 2 bucks that I had encounters with shot off of neighboring farms. I was like, I'm shooting this deer. It's just that simple. If I get it on film, I get it on film. If not, oh well. Threw the camera to the hole, drew back. He starts into a trot. I had to try. I grunted twice and got him to stop. And I held under him. I was under him with my pin. Complete guess. Something that I already know that I need to work on because I want to know how low I need to aim in situations like that if it were to happen again. Because I completely guessed. I'll be the first one to tell you that. Let it go. Double lunged him. He jumped straight in the air, mule kicked, landed on his face, and hauled it out of there. And you've seen the video. I don't know. I'm like, what? What? Like, did that just happen? There's no way that just happened. You know, I'm climbing down. There's no way. You know, and then I pull the binos up and I look at the shot and I can see blood right where he was standing. It just flood emotions going crazy. Like, disbelief. Now, I don't have service. Like, I got to tell somebody. You know, I took the camera off the camera arm, put it in my muff. And this hill behind me is like almost straight up for about 40 yards. And I felt like a mountain goat. One tilt, full sprint up that hill into that field to get service, call dad. And at this point in the morning, he's thinking he's getting a normal, typical recap. I left all my stuff in the tree. Like, I took the camera and my cell phone, my bow, the camera arm, my backpack, everything stayed in the tree. I just had to tell somebody. I was so fired up. I get up there and he just, you know, listen to the phone call because it speaks for itself. He just answers the phone like, yo, like he's expecting a typical morning recap. And I drop the bomb of, dude, I just shot the biggest buck of my life to him. And you can just hear it in his voice. Like, he's like, he's just like a scatterbrain all of a sudden. What am I? What happened? I'm on my way. Like, stay there. You know, just all this stuff. And that's real time. That's a real conversation. We don't reenact that. That's just how it happened. And it was a long 2 hours waiting on the cavalry to show up. I will tell you that.
Oh, man.
Waiting on dad and Dan and Freddie to show up. It was 2 hours after I shot that deer before we went back in there. And steady blood trail, 50, 60 yards, and he's laying there piled up. To walk up on a deer like that, with that kind of character.
Yeah.
We didn't know this deer. I didn't know this deer. We didn't have pictures of this deer. And my biggest deer by 20-plus inches, I mean, he grossed just under 140, I think 139 and 2/8 officially. And he's going to book at 129 and 5/8. So my first Pope and Young, which has been on my bucket list since I started.
Yeah.
Well, and the really cool thing is this deer on its right side has a tine that's broke off about an inch up. It's broke off. And it's amazing that the surrounding neighbors and that run trail cameras all of a sudden were starting to send pictures of this buck to Mike, said, "Hey, I saw that deer. Here's pictures of it with the tine that's not broke off." And it was cool. And I think there was one guy that actually passed this buck. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, there was a guy that messaged me on Facebook a week or so after I killed him, and sent me a picture of him, and he goes, "Hey, is this the deer that you shot?" And 100% was the same deer. And he goes, "I passed him on October 5th at 25 yards. And I just kind of like chuckled to myself, like, why would you pass a deer like this?
You don't pass deer like that in PA, man.
Well, and here's the thing. Now, we're landlocked with a bunch of posted up property on this one piece that I killed this deer. And he told me two things. One, the first one I have a hard time believing, but he told me that he didn't think the deer was that big. And two, he wanted to see another year. But then he followed that up with a question of, "Well, did you put a tape on him?" And I was like, "Yeah, just under 140. And I got, "Well, I effed up." You know, like all of a sudden, yeah, well, yeah, you think like 140 inch deer gross in PA, like who would have thought, you know, who would have thought? And I was seconds from being down the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, to this day, just reliving it. I've watched that video probably 24 times, man. Like it just doesn't get old. And I pick something out in that video almost every time I watch it that I don't even remember.
Right. Yeah.
Dude, I love the one side on that thing. Go ahead, Jack.
Caught up in the scramble.
Yeah, and like I said, it happened so fast. It was just shock. It was disbelief there at first. Like, did that really just happen? Did something finally just fall my way? I've already had 130 plus inch deer shot out that I felt I was a sit or two away from killing, shot on a neighboring property just a few weeks prior. Another 110, 115 inch 7-point a week or so prior got shot on a, you know. So I knew that the deer were there. It wasn't that at all. It was just the hours, the time, the effort, the emotions. I mean, you get emotionally invested in these seasons when I sat 110 hours this fall. You know, that's a lot of tree time.
That is a lot of tree time.
You know, but with that being said, I was rewarded. I averaged over a deer an hour this year. I saw 29 bucks and I think 87 does or something.
Yeah, 88.
I'm over a deer an hour. Like, that's awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, like, I've never had numbers like that. And I mean, I haven't really logged them. This was the first year that I logged them, but I got to spend all season in the tree because I was laid off work.
Yeah.
You didn't hear me complain.
No.
But like, man, what a year 2020 was for me in the archery world, whether it be, you know, 3D or deer hunting, because best year I've had by far.
All right. So yeah, I'm
not even the deer you were after.
Not even the deer I was after. Not the deer I was after is still out there.
Oh, he made it through the season.
As far as we know.
We don't know.
He's in the class of a deer that if he would have got shot, I feel like I would have heard about it.
Yeah, that's where mine. So that's how I'm feeling right now.
I'm hoping. I'm itching to get cameras back out and hopefully get some pictures.
Oh yeah. Whew. Dude, I love the story. I love the video too. I mean, that really is an impressive deer. I mean, congratulations on that buck.
Thank you.
Awesome buck, yeah. Man. The character on it's crazy. The one side, I love it. It's got those little stickers all over the place. It's kind of bladed out a little bit, palmated.
Yeah.
It's cool, man.
Big crab claw on the same side.
Yeah.
It's, character is pretty sweet.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, it's a little grin on your face.
I can't help it, man. I mean, like I said, Pope and Young for me has been bucket list since I started this whole thing. And, you know, my dad's been hunting 40-some years, and he's never even shot a Pope and Young. So, like, to me, that accomplishment just, I mean, like I said, it's a reward. I spent the time. I put the work in, you know, and I know guys that do that and don't get the reward. But you're not going to get the reward if, like we said earlier, if you're not out there doing it. You know, it's a no-brainer for me. I mean, it's we said it earlier. We say it all the time. There is no off-season.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can – honestly, I can relate to that. This past year wasn't so much for me. And Chuck, previous years we've been out all the time, scouting all spring, putting trail cams, running everything all summer, hunting all fall, doing the same thing through the winter and just starting over again. This year was a little bit weird. I mean, we didn't get at it. And, you know, we're talking about getting right back into that next year because neither one of us had a super successful season. And Chuck's the one who actually brought it up. I mean, he said it in a previous episode, you know, the one thing that we were missing, we weren't out there really pounding, putting the boots on the ground and really doing our homework. And, you know, it, in my opinion and in his, obviously it shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I let work get a little too much a hold of my priorities, which just sounds horrible, but, you know, work has to
be
a
top. Yeah, but you have to work. Yeah, you have to finance this habit we have of hunting deer.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to work.
Yeah, for sure. And I think worked a lot of hours this off season. And when it came to the season, you know, didn't get as many cameras out, didn't get as much real life intel, kind of fell on plan based off of past year data. And when I was putting the plan together and trying to build certain locations and certain areas for each part of the season, and then I got into the season, started realizing, you know, other people are hunting these areas already. And, you know, first day of archery, I go back to a spot that's, you know, about half a mile back in the woods, and it's kind of tucked away, a little bit hidden. And sure enough, there's a camera and already a drip tube over top of a scrape that's there every year.
Wow.
And it's the first day of season. I'm like, you got
that's rough.
Kidding.
That yeah. is rough.
It is rough.
You're talking about boots on the ground, too. I shot this deer out of a stand that we hung the first week of November. Ooh. We found this spot mid-season.
Yeah, we went in the pouring rain. I mean, on a Sunday, we went in.
It was like we said, even when we're doing it, we're still trying to get better. I mean, we hung this set mid-season on a whim. I stumbled across a scrape line on a bench that led right to a huge community scrape in the perfect pinch point for the rut. 2 weeks later, I shoot the biggest deer I've ever killed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that, man. Hunting that hot sign, really, really getting in there. I mean, that's if you listen to some of the bigger guys, listen to Jared Scheffler, like, he hunts on the ground a lot, and he's constantly going, he hunts hot sign constantly, constantly, constantly. If he gets through a piece and there's nothing there, guess what? He moves on to the next piece.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do that. And when you do it in season, I mean, look, it pays off. Exactly what you did. Hunted hot sign, bam. Biggest deer of your life.
And I, you know, for the first time, and, you know, I've passed deer per se in the past, but I've passed bucks that I have hanging on my wall this year that I could have shot on film.
Yeah. But you have to do that. If you want to shoot something quality, you do have to let the little ones go, dude. Yep. You do.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree. I mean, you can see, you know, behind me here, there's my first three, four, you can't see one. My first three archery bucks are right behind me here. And, you know, I think the biggest one is maybe 110 inches, you know, but those were my first three. I shot one in PA.
What's wrong with that?
No. I mean, absolutely. And one of them's an Ohio buck. I shot my first ever archery buck in PA. And then exactly 1 week later in Ohio, shot my biggest archery buck. And then I shot this half rack, really cool 6-point side buck the next year. So I was on fire there for a little bit. And then it got to a point where, you know, like you said, I kind of started to mature now. Okay. Finally, I've done it. I mean, I've been archery hunting since I was 14 years old. I think it took me 12 years for me to shoot my first buck. And I mean, that's a lot of time spent up in a tree, a lot. Yeah. I messed up a lot.
I feel you. I feel you there.
Every way you could possibly screw it up, I did it. And I'm talking on over a dozen different bucks. I finally got it done and then, you know, got it done again. And the next year I killed another one. Well, it just so happens that next year I killed that other one. He was 145 inches and an absolute tank.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You're shit-locked, let's be honest. Sometimes that's just how it happens, dude. I mean, Cody, perfect example. The kid, you know, love him to death. I put him in my tree 2016, the year I shot that 9-point that I was showing you guys earlier. I put him in my one tree the last day of the season, the last morning. What's he do? He goes in and shoots first buck with him. Like, haven't shot a buck out of this tree.
It was about 110 inches.
It was 110-inch 8-point. Real nice deer. Like, what? Like, I've hunted that stand all season. I haven't even seen a buck to shoot. You go there and shoot a buck out of it. You know, I mean, sometimes that's just how it happens. And screwing up on deer, like you're saying, it sucks at the time. It does. I've been there. I feel you when you say that. But that's experience. That's game time experience. You can't get that anywhere else. And that just turns you into the hunter that you are today. And you get to learn, you get to teach those lessons too, which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree, man.
Plenty to teach.
It's an ever evolving game that we play.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But we are getting closer on time here. Now, Charles mentioned something before we got started, and we've given you guys a little bit of time to kind of think about it. We usually do your favorite hunting story, but since it's you and your dad, Charles had the idea. I absolutely freaking love it. I want to hear your favorite hunting story together.
Well, that's
so tough.
I know.
Man, that's gonna
that is so tough because every hunt.
Well, you know what? Since we already mentioned his turkey hunt, which is probably my favorite one, but my other one that's close would be his very first deer.
I like it.
And that was the doe. And it was funny. It was the youth hunt that's in October, that mentored youth season there for 3 days. But we went out the night before and, we're just sitting on the ground and we had, I think he was, 10 or 11. Anyhow, we had a buck come in. I said, well, you can't shoot the buck because we're sitting here with a rifle. You know? Well, then I said, well, you know what? I had a pop-up ground blind that I bought when he started. He wanted to go to the woods. We had to buy I bought a blind to get him in. So the next morning we got there, I left the blind set up right where I wanted to go. Well, we got there and it was pouring rain. I said, well, let's at least keep your gun in the case. We'll take it to the blind. We'll get in the blind and we'll, you know, be dry. Well, we got in the blind. It was still dark. Just pouring rain, and he fell asleep. Two doe come out. We're hunting it was a gas line. Two doe come out to our left, about 100 yards, 80, 900 yards, somewhere in there. And by the time I got him awake, the first one had already gone across. Well, then the second one, I said, right here, Mike. Well, he gets the gun up, puts it out there. The dude is like a seasoned pro. A deer come out, and I had made shooting sticks with a couple limbs and a zip tie. Deer come out and stopped it. As soon as he stopped it, he shot. And deer ran off and I said, man, I think he hit that one. I don't know. But we went over and found blood. He didn't go maybe 50 yards. But I thought that was the coolest one that he fell asleep and which he does a lot. And that was one of my coolest ones.
Some of my best sleep comes in the woods.
Oh, man. You put me in an old school climber.
I miss it.
turkey season, you get into, you know, birds shut up for a while and you just lean up against a tree and the sun's hitting you and it's nothing better, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I will treat you to a story that happened to me in Ohio, but I'll let Mike go ahead and tell his favorite hunt. And then I'll tell you what happened to me in Ohio.
Favorite hunt or favorite father-son moment during a hunt?
Either one. Whichever one you like.
So, I mean, all my hunts are my favorite, but I will never forget. I'll never forget the first buck I shot. I was young. I didn't shoot very many deer with a bow. And we were in different trees, probably, I don't know, 150 yards apart or so. And we had those old walkie talkies. That's
Motorolas.
Yeah, Motorolas. And I mean, we're separated by a hill, basically. he's on one side and I'm on the other. We're talking back and forth, haven't seen anything. And all of a sudden, I just cut him off. I'm like, hang on, there's a buck right here. And this a busted up 6-point, walks out in front of me, I don't know, probably 30 yards or so. And he's same gas line in the same general area that I shot my first deer on that he just told you the story about. And this buck comes out and he's going to go straight across this gas line. It's obvious. Like, he comes straight out, never broke stride. Like, he's headed straight away from me. And again, I'm young, man. I don't know. Okay, grab your grunt call. And I still carry this grunt call to this day for the simple fact that I grunted the first buck I ever killed him with this thing. But that's besides the I grunt 3 times at this deer and he turns on a dime and comes right back in 10 yards. I double lung him. He does a semicircle around the tree and falls over. So I hop back on the walkie-talkie and I must have talked for 5 minutes without taking a breath. I just rambled on and
not taking his finger off the button either.
I never took my finger off the button, so Dad couldn't say anything. So as soon as I let off, he doesn't say anything other than, dude, can I talk now? I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Like, all of a sudden, like, it just brought me back down to earth and I'm like, oh yeah, sorry, like, my bad. You know, just, I remember that conversation just because it was the first buck that I ever killed with a bow, but I relive that conversation every time I kill something and I'm on the phone with him, because every conversation that we have after a harvest, it's not the same conversation, but it's the same atmosphere. It's the same excitement. And we've done it time after time after time after time over the years, and it never gets old. He's always the first call. It doesn't matter what it is, buck, doe, turkey, bear, I mean, anything. Anything that I put an arrow in, he's the first call. And that excitement and that interaction, it just always brings me back to that first buck that I killed, because I can still to this day remember him say, dude, can I talk now? Like, he was just so animated, and he always is. We both are. And I'll never forget that. I will never, ever forget that.
That's epic, man.
See, we should have been running cameras then.
Yeah.
I should have been in the tree with you with the cameras, what I should have been doing. But that was, you know,
besides
what do you do? Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, let's hear it. Let's hear this, Ohio.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't know how long. We were, it's been early 80s. We went on a primitive hunt in Salt Fork State Park in Ohio. You guys familiar with that?
Oh, my goodness. Does Charles know that place?
Yeah, okay. That's where we go.
Yeah, I hear it's a, I hear it's a hotbed for Sasquatches, but
it anyhow, is.
Yeah, and that's what I hear. Every time I see something like that, oh, yeah, I was there. But we went on a primitive hunt. We were bow hunting, but I guess they had allowed muzzleloaders and that too, for this hunt. And, right away we noticed there was just a ton of guys. So we went driving around the park and we noticed that one part of the park, there's a pretty good swamp. So we got in there just scouting, looking around. The water was probably just, wasn't quite knee deep. But anywhere you got a dry spot, a little island, there was just a ton of deer signs. We thought, well, you know what? The guys, normal, you know, other people aren't going to walk back in this water. And so we thought, well, there you go. That's what we're going to do. So the very next year, the opening day, the first day of the hunt, we got back in there in the dark. And I had, you guys remember or have you seen the old Baker climbing tree stand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They're a death trap. All right. But they are.
Sure are.
How it didn't kill me on this hunt, I don't know. But I carried that thing in on my back in the dark with a flashlight to come to a little island there, get up out of the water. And there were some nice trails cut across, and I could see a big maple tree of his standing there. I thought, well, I'm going to get in that. Well, I got my stand on the tree, and my hand climber, which I hold with my hands, and it goes above, you know, and you know how you inchworm your way up the tree. I didn't go up 7 or 8 feet, and there's a big limb sticking out the back. And I didn't have a saw or anything, so I thought, oh, this is not high enough. I need to get down out of here and get to another tree. So now I'm getting in a hurry, personally. So I'm taking pretty big bites coming down the tree. And when I'm about, three feet off the ground or so, I'm looking down. I'm thinking, all right. And it's just breaking day now. And I'm thinking, you know, if I just take one more bite, one more step down the tree, I can get off the tree. Well, as I lowered my hand climber to get it to bite and put weight on it, it slipped. All right. Now, you know how you're situated in these climbing stands. I had my feet in straps facing the tree. Well, when the hand climber let loose, of course, I lost my grip on it, and I went over backwards. Okay. Over backwards with my feet still facing the tree. And I was close enough to the ground that I could touch the ground with my hand. And I thought, I better slide my bow out of the way so I didn't fall on it. And the first thing I thought was, well, this is kind of funny. Now I'm going to see a deer, you know. Well, I thought all I'd have to do is sit back up. Well, that's not the case. As soon as I started to move, I got a pain down my left leg. And at this point, it's not funny anymore. I thought maybe I broke my ankle. Now, you guys have been in the woods at daybreak, and you know how quiet it is. In my mind, I'm thinking, all right, who's the closest one to me? And it happened to be my buddy, Bert. So, well, I started hollering, yo, Bert, you know, Bert. And got a reply. He says, we're coming, hang on. And hanging upside down, I look. Here come three guys through the swamp in a canoe. They come right up and beached within 10 feet of me. All three of them get out, lift me back up onto my tree. Now I'm bear hugging the tree, man. I was like, oh my God, my legs are shaking. I mean, I could hardly talk. And they go, and again, the one guy goes, you were home. We thought maybe you shot yourself. I said, yeah, with my bow. Okay. They said, well, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. Just go ahead and go. Get out of here. No, I'm fine. I said, I'll just sit right here on my stand 2 feet off the ground. Well, they left. They got in their canoe and took off. And I'm just sitting there. I'm standing on a tree, putting weight on my leg. I'm trying to see if I actually did break or not, but I ended up, I didn't. It was a sprain pretty good. And next thing I heard, splash, splash, splash. And I got, oh my God, here comes a deer. No, here comes Bert. Bert come running right over to my tree. And he says, dude, are you all right? I said, no, I'm good. I just fell out of my tree. I'm all right. He goes, you sure you're okay? I said, yeah, he left. And, I sat there until about lunchtime, and I limped back out to the car, and he had a van, and we were hunting with a Baptist minister and his son. And they were standing there at the car, and I figured, I'm just going to walk up. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to act stupid. So I walked up, and they looked at me, and the pastor goes, boy, we glad to see you. I go, why? He goes, dude, did you hear that guy screaming down in there this morning? I said, yeah, that would have been me. And, they just had a dumb look on their face. And, you know, everybody I saw that entire weekend must have been related to one of those three guys in that canoe. Because all I heard was, all right, are you the guy that was hanging upside down in the tree stand? Yeah, that was me.
Oh,
and
man.
For years and years and years, I had to endure those jokes. But, yeah, they're probably still telling that story in Salt Fork State Park.
That's hilarious.
Well, must be something about that park, Rick, because if you go back to our episodes and listen to the one with my younger brother where he shot his Ohio buck, we were out there and a buddy of ours actually fell out of his tree and was dangling from safety harness. He was standing in a climber and all of a sudden the bottom of his climber just completely dropped.
Trapdoor.
Wow.
And he did the same thing. He's screaming and yelling, and my brother was close by and had to run out his truck. I can't remember what he got. I think he got
his climber. I think.
What's that?
I think he got his climber.
Yeah, he got it. He ran to get his climber because he was hunting a ladder stand. Ran to get his climber, popped somebody, and asked him to call, you know, for the 911. Meanwhile, I'm all the way on the other side of potentially the same swamp you're talking about right now.
Yeah, could be.
And I'm listening to sirens come.
And you're going, what is going on?
I'm filming it because
you're filming it.
Are howling the whole time to the siren. I'm like, this is so cool. I can't wait to show them. Well, coming from their perspective, wasn't very cool because the ambulance was coming to save them.
That's great.
That's wild.
Wow.
Salt Fork, I'm very familiar with it. That's pretty wild. That's a funny story.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Oh, man.
Yeah, unbelievable.
This just took a wild turn.
That did take a wild turn. I was not expecting that.
Jeez.
We said it was a small world.
Yeah, we did. That's crazy because we both have wild stories from State Park in Ohio.
The same park.
I think you have to watch it. There's no other explanation.
Wow.
I agree. Every time I see a program and they mention about the, you know, seeing the squatches on Salt Fork State Park, I was there.
Yep.
I didn't see any squatches. But
this middle buck right here over my shoulder, I don't know if you can see that, Rick. That's the one I shot at Salt Fork.
I can't see it. Mike's okay. Got the computer upstairs.
He's the 110 I shot at Salt Fork.
Second. That'd be nice.
That's a good buck.
Bow? With a bow?
Yep, with a bow.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah. We've seen some out there. My brothers caught some. Two of my brothers shot really nice ones out there. That's a really great part.
Oh, yeah. 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 Joe shot a real nice
I've never been back. I've been too embarrassed to go back.
We're still talking about you at the local diner, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm telling you. I know there's got to be stories floating around there, man. As fast as that got around that park, everybody was related. Yeah, it was my uncle's cousin that was in the canoe or something. It's like, unbelievable.
That's one thing I'd love to do, man, is get into Ohio.
Yeah. What were they doing?
We had some good.
Were they running a trap line? Because when we go down there, there's all kinds of guys running a trap line out of a canoe through that creek that runs through.
I don't know. No, they were hunting. I assume. I mean, I'm looking at them upside down, so I don't know. I mean, I was glad I wasn't in West Virginia. I was in a bad way.
Oh, man, that's great.
Oh, my.
But, I mean, you know. I went home and threw that. I went home and threw that Baker tree stand away. I stopped using that. I had too many close calls with that thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's another. It's a different feeling when you feel horrible. A climber slip.
Oh, yep. That was the worst one. Yeah, I even often thought after that. I mean, what would happen if I was 20 feet up the tree and was hanging like right. that?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Somebody would have to come up the tree. You know that may not have ended well.
Yeah.
So, but.
Oh man, those are both good stories. I love them.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're getting to the end here. Before we let you guys go, Mike, throw out there where everybody can find Grip and Grin, your social media, your website, all that fun stuff.
Man, I mean, like I said earlier, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of them, Grip and Grin Outdoors. Same line. You pull them up. You'll find us on all of those platforms. And then the website, Dad, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's literally just www.gripandgrinoutdoors.com.
That is correct. Yeah.
And like I said, we're kind of in a weird spot with the website right now. Kind of got a couple things going on. Like I said, we are trying to get a store on there, and then just your typical tabs. We have links to our various social medias. I think we also at one point had a link to the Game Commission's website and all this fun stuff.
We do. Yeah. And we have it lists the moon phases and different things like that. Yeah.
There's some cool stuff on there. And like I said, I give my younger brother all the credit for that because way over my head.
Yeah. It's been his baby. Yeah.
But, no, I mean, like I said from the beginning, man, it's a lot of fun and it seems like every year or something out, we're either getting another camera or somebody else wants on board or there's something that happens every year that just reminds us why we're doing this. And like I said, from the get go, we're not by any means professionals at this, but what we do put out there is 100% real and raw. And that's just who we are. And, we are having a blast doing it.
I like it, man. That's a perfect place to end right there, man.
We appreciate you having us on. That was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you guys both for coming on. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to get together and shoot some 3D or something this summer. And
I would love that.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you up at Freiburg. Yeah, maybe we'll see you at Freiburg.
I hope so.
Hopefully get together and do this sometime too.
Yeah, I'll let you know what day it is, and then maybe we can even organize it to where you're either in the group with us or something like that, because I know one of the people that kind of run the show there, and I can make sure that we're close together, if not in the same kind of group.
That's cool.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yep.
All right, boys.
Thanks. Really appreciate you coming on and spending your time with us tonight.
Absolutely, man. It was a blast.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Hopefully we get to do this again sometime, too. It's a lot of fun.
Maybe we're talking about another buck.
That's what I'm talking about.